I'm definitely in charge of that. Good. That's a good start. So our pulpit minister is in Kansas City, I think, doing some kind of doctoral defense or I don't know, theological class function this week. And so he's asked me to fill in, and we're going to continue on our series on Christian behavior. And so let me do the disclaimer that he did, which is that this is all based on, I went too far. This is all based on the works of a study guide that was based on a C.S. Lewis talk, which became part of the book Mere Christianity, I think book 3 of Mere Christianity. And anybody who hasn't taken the opportunity to read Mere Christianity, it's worth your time. But what we're kind of into at this time, and I think I had, did I go one slide too far? I thought there was a special thanks. Well, never mind. What we're into this time is virtues. And I kind of need to stop and have an overview. I imagine when C.S. Lewis first taught this in the 40s, he didn't think anybody needed an introduction to what a virtue is. But in 2019, I think we really do. C.S. Lewis was building upon traditional Western civilization in the acknowledgement of virtues. And the best way I know to describe a virtue is it's the opposite of a vice. That's the quickest way. And if you know me, you're familiar with vice, because that I have. But the idea of a virtue is sort of like a gauge or a template. You know, my grandfather was a prototype engineer, what they used to call a tool and die maker, and he would have a series of gauges. And when he would build a production situation, he would always have the template, the measurement device, and you would produce something and you would say, does this match up against the standard, the idea of perfection? And I think virtues are useful to us as Christians in that regard, because it's something that we can hold up. All of the virtues we're going to talk about, we're doing cardinal virtues today, always lead back to Christ, always lead back to God. And this goes to the lesson, and I think most of you were with us 4 Sundays ago, I think it's a month now, Ben preached about good. What is good? You know, and how can anything be good save God? And as we go through these virtues, I want that idea to be in your mind, because it's certainly the case with these virtues as we move forward. So, having said all that, we're going to talk about the 7 virtues. The only way, the way Lewis says this is that there are 4 common virtues and what we're going to call cardinal virtues. And I'll put a pin in that because I'll be back for it in a minute. But Lewis says, and then there are 3 virtues that he actually called theological virtues. We're calling them Christian virtues, but if you want to go to the actual article, C.S. Lewis refers to the other 3 as theological virtues, and I believe those are on tap for us next week, so we're going to focus on the cardinal virtues. But the way C.S. Lewis put it is only Christians would know about the theological virtues, which I find that whole concept delightful. But I submit to you that the 4 common cardinal virtues that we're going to talk about today all have an aspect that's not available to those who don't know God. There's going to be something in the same way, if any of you can remember your life before Christ very clearly, and you met a Christian and you thought, there's something about this person. They helped me and didn't expect anything in return. I saw them stop on the side of the road, and this is the thing that actually happened to me, in 106 degrees, and help somebody. And I knew that was a peculiar character. What I didn't understand at that time is that was a Christian, and that was a virtue happening right in front of my young eyes. So as we get into this, cardinal is actually from the Latin word called cardo, not cardio. So there's no exercise involved in this. But cardo actually, it directly translates as hinge if you have a Latin class. But when you really get into it, it has more to do with the idea of a pivot or a fulcrum. And so the bird cardinal in North America was taken from the vestments that the Catholic cardinal, church cardinals wore. Their title was taken from this same root word in Latin, and the idea being that these people would play a pivotal role in the foundation of that organization, the Catholic Church. The cardinal virtues, in the same way, are pivotal to the concept, and I would say to Christianity, but it's basic. It's further down than that, to civilization, to our life together. I mentioned last week when Ben was teaching that you really can't have anything good without morality. Some years ago, I was involved in a large construction outfit, and we had a practice where these different directors and managers would give a talk before these large meetings. And we had a man one time who got up and gave a talk about morality and how the problem they'd been having was some quality control. They were having some 3,000 PSI concrete, should have been 5,000. Don't ask me about all that. But it wasn't being done right. And he said the problem underpinning all this is morality. And he didn't wander into Christianity, but I sensed that he could have. And I was waiting for him to. But it was very fascinating the way he approached it. And he just said, without the proper morality, why is it my job to worry about what's wrong? Without some kind of morality, I just leave it for the next person, right? That's the same thing that keeps us from throwing our trash on the side of the road or eating something in the grocery store and not paying for it. I hope you don't do that. Don't do that. Stop now. if it's happening. But what used to be just common sense behavior in 2019 is a little bit getting fuzzy, if you don't mind me saying. And I'm at that place where I can start to become an older person. And so I have this a newfound, like a superpower, to get on a rant about the way things used to be. For those of you who are younger, it's marvelous. You have a lot to look forward to when you get to be older, because you can rant for hours about how it was better and standards were higher and people were decent and the neighbors were friendly and they knew each other's names and asked after their business and they were interconnected in a community. So I don't let me rant tonight. But there's something to that idea, and I think it has to do with virtues. I think it really has to do with the concept of four of the virtues we're going to talk about tonight. And so as you do that, I want you to think about pivoting and how these four virtues, the cardinal virtues, let us pivot and sort of make our stand. And I'm going to start off with prudence. Basically, C.S. Lewis's opinion is thinking of prudence as thinking through the consequences of your actions. And this is kind of an underrated virtue. A lot of evil in our world begins with a complete lack of prudence. You can say foresight. You could say ambivalence. You could say thoughtlessness, right? I'm a young man who had a very thoughtful mother, and I got accused of thoughtlessness quite often. Did you ever have your mother ask you if you'd send a thank you card to somebody for a birthday present? Because that was my mother's full-time job. And I really appreciate her doing that, because now I'm the one who reminds people to send thank you cards, and I feel like I'm doing it sometimes in her name. The truth is, my mother was doing it in God's name. She was doing it because it's the right thing to do. It's the way to show somebody that you care. And you have to take a little forethought to do that. A stamp has to be acquired. Some stationery has to be. You see where this leads. So Matthew 10, 16 reads, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." And this scripture is very interesting, because this is in here to help us juxtapose our calling as children of Christ with the requirement to also have some smarts about us. I'll read a quote from C.S. Lewis in a little bit, but he's basically saying, you don't check your brain out. Christianity is not the death of thought for you. And then God doesn't want intellectual slackers. 1 Corinthians, and I'm going to read it down here because I can read this a lot better. 1 Corinthians 10:23, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up or edify. If you're as old as I am, you remember that in the King James. And I think that's a beautiful concept for this. Because in fact, there is a version, and I couldn't find it, of this that I heard many years ago in a Christian church that said all things are possible, not all things are prudent. And I think that captures this idea very well. And so prudence helps us sort of navigate, how do I put it succinctly? There are 10 commandments. Is everything else available to us? That's a trick question. Because the answer can be yes and no. We'll talk about that when we get to temperance. But we really have a never-ending education that we're signing up for in Christianity. And some of it is our personal situation. And some of it is how we relate to other people. My example on this is always, I might see what's wrong with you. I might very clearly, and I'm struggling not to call anybody's name out here, because I really don't, this is not a true thing, but I might see exactly what's wrong with you. And it might be as clear as the day to me. Would it be prudent to call you out right now, today? That'd be a really bad idea, by the way, right now with the microphone. or if I can use an example from modern life, to tweet it out in front of everybody. That would be imprudent. It would just not be a classy maneuver. If you've been in a position of being counselor or counseling, you know these things are best done where? One-on-one. Quietly. You've had to counsel me a number of times, and I always appreciate you doing it on the down low. but that's just a prudent step. And so prudence is a tough one, and that's the thing about the virtues. They really hold us to a higher standard rather than a simple set of rules that say, don't do this and don't do that. The virtues are approaching it from the other side, which is, here's the template, reach this level. Any prudent questions or comments before we move on? So this is C.S. Lewis's quote, Christ wants a child's heart but a grown-up's head. I thought that was cute. Because it's not exactly the same as you learned in Vacation Bible School. Now that you're a grown adult, you've got some decisions to make. Temperance is a great example of that. Temperance, in my lifetime, or a little before that, has sort of come to mean concerns dealing with alcohol exclusively. And I'm not going to accuse any of you being living through prohibition, but we all have history books, and we recall that there was a huge temperance movement, I'm sure, in England and then in the United States to a lesser degree. And I think the women got axes, if I remember correctly, and they were busting open casks in order to get rid of this liquor. And we sort of, because that was a call to temperance movement, we sort of have inextricably intertwined temperance with anti-drinking or even substance abuse issues. No, I want to disconnect those two, not entirely, but for most of us, that's not going to be our challenge. But we might have a challenge. So let me read, hold on a minute, let me read Proverbs 25, 27, 28. It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory. A man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. So that was honey, and it, by the way, I tried to get into that translation and see if it was sweetener or something. It's honey. Turns out the word for honey is so ancient it's common in most languages, believe it or not, as is the word for bee, but that's another story. The idea there is it's really not a good idea. And, of course, now if there was a doctor in here, they would be nodding their head and talking about type 2 diabetes and how Americans are eating too much sweet, too much sugar. And we didn't have that science available to us as humans at that time. But the proverb indicates that we had that wisdom. Maybe we didn't know why too much honey was bad. But I'm guessing there was some crazy man who lived in the hills who ate honey all day and died at 30 or something. If it wasn't divinely inspired. And so for me, it might actually be honey. Some of you may know I had a fair amount of kidney trouble some years ago, and I try to limit my sugar intake because my body is happy to get a kidney infection if I have a bunch of sweets in it. It's just I do the best kidney infections. I get them early and they last forever. But if I avoid sweets, it doesn't happen. It just doesn't ever manifest itself. So for me, temperance would be no more Dr. Pepper. And I love Dr. Pepper. I can pick out the 23 flavors. If you gave me a Dr. Pepper with 22, I think I could tell you what was missing. That's so good. Anyway, enough about that. So in my case, self-control or temperance for me might be different. A glass of wine is not a temptation for me in any way, shape, or form, especially if I'm thirsty. Ech. But a soda, that's a problem. So let's move forward. Proverbs 16:32, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Anybody have a bit of a temper? Okay. I inherited mine, so I come by it honestly. I come from a family of hotheads. And it's just like sweets. Best that I not get started with that. Does that make sense? Best that I not indulge a little bit of that. If I start venting a little bit, sometimes at that driver, you know, the one who completely stops to turn right in the road. If I get grouchy, I stay grouchy. Grouchy doesn't do any good for anybody. And I'm not affecting that driver. Doesn't care about me at all. They have never noticed me behind them upset. And so that's a great example of temperance being called for. 1 Corinthians 9:25, every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. And the idea, any long-distance runners in here? I wasn't. I ran the 2 miles as far as I could go without cardiac arrest in high school. But even in the 2 mile, that's 8 laps around a football track, around a standard track. I think it's 8 laps. You've got to not break too quick, right? You're going to be running 4 laps sort of with a pack. And then between laps 5 and 6, you need to assert yourself and figure out who's going to finish this race. You start sprinting too soon, you're done. And so the idea of self-control, I can't run flat out for 2 miles as fast as I can. So I need to kick it in at the end. And my track coach, Coach Day, whew, that's a while ago, would always sort of give me the signal when he thought I should kick in, when he thought it was time for me to go. Eventually, I didn't need to look at coach anymore. I had my own self-control. I understood how to run that race. Titus, we just went over this a while back. Titus 1:7-8, for an overseer, God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. That's a lot. And that's a delightful standard, but that's a great example of the idea of temperance, because all those indulgences, and I'm going to call them indulgences just in the way honey is an indulgence, are things that once you get started in can definitely lead to ruin. Does that make sense to everybody? Is this all? Can you kind of see how these virtues become template material for us? As we go through these, I want you guys to think about somebody who manifests these virtues for you. And you don't have to shout their name out. But I want to challenge you, if you think of somebody that has temperance, for example, do they also love justice? Do they also have fortitude? And what I found that exercise quite interesting, because I found that I had Christian heroes, many of whom had a couple of those virtues, but when I started getting into 3 and 4 and then on into the Christian virtues, into 5 and 6 and 7, I struggled to find any example outside of Christ that I thought was the template or the gauge for those virtues. And I think that shows us how interesting and useful the idea of virtues are. When 100 years ago, children would have been schooled on virtue from a very young age. But virtue today in a public school setting requires a lot of judgments that I don't know that we're making anymore. It's interesting what we've done with virtues, and we'll talk about that as we go forward. Okay, I need to advance you, and then I need to advance me. Justice. What do you guys think about when you hear justice? What's your first thought?
Fairness.
I like that. And that is probably as good as it gets, is fairness. I confess I thought of a Western of the lone gunman hunting somebody down, and he may or may not be deputized. Well, it can be. Who knows the story of Frank Eaton? Who's Frank Eaton? Anybody? He's got an alliterative name that you might know him by. He wears orange chaps, wears a hat, Pistol Pete. Thank you. Extra points. Somebody got it over there, too. No doubt a poke. Okay. Let's not get involved in that up here. I think it's an OU crowd, to be honest with you, so we can meet afterwards in quiet. But Frank Eaton saw his father gunned down when he was 8 years old. And Moose Beeman, his neighbor, put a gun in his hand a week later and said, "You're going to want to get revenge on those boys." He said revenge. And Frank Eaton later said he started off at revenge, and he found out that he had a calling for justice. He became a U.S. Marshal working for, what's his name? Isaac Parker, Judge Parker in Fort Smith. And yeah, the hanging judge. Pistol Pete made a career of coming over into Indian Territory and bringing back only the guilty, I'm sure, to face justice. Yeah, that's not what happened at all, but that's another story. That's kind of what I think of as justice, but the true virtue of justice is fairness. And it's the idea that to know what's fair, you kind of have to know the rules of the game. If that makes any sense? If you ask me to referee a football game, I'm your man. Basketball, I could do okay. Cricket, no, I'm out. Lacrosse, I don't know what happens in that game. I don't know what they're all doing. They're running around. It looks crazy to me. So even though I would consider myself a fair person, I have no context. And that's what's so interesting to me as a Christian. If we're called upon to enact the virtue of fairness, sometimes fairness indicates I don't know enough to judge. Does that make sense? Have you ever found yourself in a situation of, do you have kids? Who has more than one child?